Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Deeney.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graeme Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travel to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast wouldn't happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graeme Hunter right now to join us, to become a socio, and to get every interview we produce without adverts, and before it goes out on the main feed, plus lots of bonus content, including the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. You will also get bonus content every month, including the audio versions of my regular columns for ESPN. So do please go to patreon.com/Graeme Hunter and join the club and get your family and friends to do so. Maybe even strangers in the street. Love you. Welcome back. My guest today is Jason McAteer, once a Bolton Wanderers, Liverpool, Blackburn Rovers, Sunderland and, of course, Ireland. I've met and worked with Jason a couple of times and I really liked him. Thought he was a smart guy, fun guy, with a point of view that I like to listen to. Now, Jason, in his excellent autobiography, describes the concept that there, through his career, have been two versions of him. Trigger, which was the nickname he carried throughout his playing career, was a bit of a lad, always up for fun and trouble. Jason, meanwhile, was a much deeper thinker, and not just about football. In ways, I guess, you'll meet both of them in this two-parter, starting with this episode, where we spend a lot of time on Bruce Rioch, a big footballer for Scotland and for Derby and Everton during the 70s, whose managerial stock was sky-high when he took Jason's Bolton up two divisions. You're going to learn about Jason's mentality too, which I think is heavily influenced by the start he had in the game. A start which is increasingly rare these days. In this series of interviews, we've heard it before, but Mr. McAteer heard the words, "you'll never make it," or their equivalent, a lot, particularly in a local watering hole. And as you'll go on to listen to, he learned to use all of this as fuel, use it to his advantage. Concepts that I identified with a lot. Parental warning, we start quite heavily on golf, and boy, I love talking golf to Jason. We could have made the entire interview about that sport, and he's very articulate about something that he's pretty nearly obsessed by. Anyway, for the moment, here he is. In fact, is it true? Here they are, both Trigger and my preferred version, Jason McAteer.
Dear listeners to The Big Interview, we're now live with an Irish legend, one of the fighting McAteers, a true Wirral Scouser. We're in the very, very pleasant and estimable company of Jason McAteer. Jason, good afternoon to you and welcome to The Big Interview.
It's an absolute pleasure, mate, to come on. I think, what is it? What am I? 108, is it? Why is it taking you so long?
108, because we couldn't get in touch with you. In terms of quality, that's just a number of where you've appeared. There's something that puts you high, high up in quality. And I know that already because we've shared a stage in Dublin once, which is a great boast of mine. Now, Jason, today we've been arranging our timetables around each other, which means both of us need to get a better life. But you could see from our WhatsApp conversation that I was on the golf course earlier on today, knocking the dazzy around in startling style. But the last time that I did an interview with one of our guests on the golf course, it was at the Belfry, and it was Stan Petrov of Celtic and Aston Villa fame. And that interview, Jason, started off really strangely because, just apropos of nothing, I said, what's your favourite club in the bag? And he got into probably the pitching wedge because around the green, I'm totally steely and that. And within seconds, we're talking about his time in the Bulgarian army and how the greatest thing he can boast about is that he can still blindfold himself and strip down an AK-47 and put it back together again. You can see where this is going. So my two questions to you would be, if you reach for the golf bag, irrespective of where you think you are on a hole or in what course you are, what's the club that says to you, yeah, Jason, it's me again, I'm ready?
Well, first of all, I'm obsessed by golf. Obsessed with it. The swing, like I'm right into it, the biomechanics of it. A lot of my mates are all golfers. I'm a big watcher of golf. So, yeah, I'm right on your page here. My go-to club, I would probably say 8-iron. A nice controlled club. Yeah, it's a nice distance. You know, you're looking between 140, 150, anything sort of around that. You can also use it around the greens, a little bump and run now and again. But if you said to me, right, you've got to pull a club out the bag, I'd go 8-iron, mate.
And when you talk about the biomechanics of the swing, are you thinking not just about where you want the swing to start and finish, but your physical shape and how you want to fade or turn the ball? When you talk about the biomechanics of the swing, what have you done to affect that, and to what end?
Lessons. I think if you look through my book collection, probably 80% will be about golf, the swing. And they're so different, obviously, so many variants of it and stuff. And, you know, I'm obsessed with YouTube and Instagram. And, you know, I listen to a lot of coaches and stuff. I've got one now that I go and see, obviously not through lockdown, but before lockdown, I was with him. And, you know, just trying to learn basically consistency of a swing. It's funny, really, because if you said to me you can skank one from 140 yards to a foot away from the hole, or you could hit one out the middle, pops right out and goes 20 yards over the green, which one would you take? I'd take the 20 yards over the green all day long, because it was just felt right. It was in the right position. It looked great and it popped out the club. There's nothing worse than a skanky one, but there's nothing like drilling a drive down the middle of a fairway 300 yards, obviously in Spain or somewhere hot, where you get that little bit of extra flight. But yeah, it fascinates me, mate. It absolutely fascinates me.
If you're out there on your own, which I love, it's a very different atmosphere than you're out in a pair or in a four, and you're hitting shots, and I'm obviously owning up here something myself. I talk to myself a lot, because I quite like my own company, I find myself funny, but if I'm out on the golf course and I'm hitting a shot, I'll be talking as I've hit it. Oh, Graham, that's... Oh, you beauty. Graham, that's... No, hold on a second. I'll be... You know, if you were to stumble upon me on a golf range or alone and I'm playing 18 on myself... The degree to which I'm talking to myself is high. Do you do that, or have you got all the conversations stored up in your head as you've hit, or you say, "Now listen, no, I wanted to fade that, or I see that, so this is what I'll do." Do you talk to yourself a wee bit?
Yeah, I'm a talker, mate. Yeah, I've always done that, and it's not just with golf. My career, you know, I would very often talk to myself during the game. You know, I talk to myself as in a macca, and it's a third person. And it's like, you know, I've read Steve Peters' Chimp Paradox, so it's very much the chimp is in my ear. And I'll be like, "Macca, what was that?" Or, you know, "Go, Macca, come on, let's go back to basics." Or, "Come on, Macca, breathe, breathe." Or, "Come on, Macca, you know, we've got 2 minutes, you know, to go," or whatever it is. Or, "Come on, just hang in." So I've always been a talker. On the golf course, as you know, there's nothing more frustrating. So, and we don't hit the perfect shot all the time. We, you know, we're 3 in 10, aren't we? You know, with that. And, you know, so for the other 7 shots, I'm actually beating myself up. So, like, what is that? And there's plenty of expletives in there. And, I am very, very critical of myself and beat myself up. I practice a lot. I put a lot of effort into it. I do think for the effort, you should always be rewarded. And it's the most unrewarding game, isn't it, for the amount of practice you put in.
Growing up as a Scot, we had a midfield at one stage with Asa Hart for Don Masson and Bruce Rea. And Bruce I've met and I like, and we got on. But you're in a privileged position because this guy that made a club that's now struggling desperately, but is one of the historic famous members of the football family in England, and he's also the guy that gifted Dennis Bergkamp to Arsenal, you had a really good first-hand knowledge of. He had a big influence on you. But what was the kind of car that Bruce Rioch made you give back, and why did he do that?
Mate, I signed for Phil Neal at Bolton. I was on 100 quid, and I went to the bank and got a £2,000 loan and bought a Mini Metro, an Austin Mini Metro, blue. And I tore the arse out of it, up and down the M62, up to Bolton, to Bendon Park, every day, via Halewood and Speak, because three of the lads used to jump in. It was like sardines in this car, mate. And, in the end, the engine fell out of it, and, you know, I just battered it. But luckily for me, I was doing well, and I signed a new contract, and Bruce had come into the club, and he sat me down and he said, "You do well for me, I'll look after you, and I'll improve your contract every time you do well for me. And we'll set targets and all this kind of stuff," which was great management because it was an incentive for me. And as you rightly say, I had a fantastic relationship with him. Took to him straight away. Colin Todd was his assistant. And, you know, me and Alan Stubbs have a laugh. We kind of felt that Stubbsy was Colin Todd's project and Bruce was mine, or I was his. And, you know, Colin would stay behind with Stubbsy and Bruce would stay behind with me, and we'd work on left foot, right foot, heading, third man running, all this kind of stuff, shooting. And I loved it. Tackling, how to tackle properly, how to tackle and get away with it. All these things. He taught me so much. But to go back to your question is, if you've ever been to Bendon Park, or you ever remember Bendon Park, when you come off the motorway, you come round, you go down the hill. And on the right-hand side, Bendon Park's on your right-hand side, but just before you get to Bendon Park, there's a row of shops on the right, which there was a pie shop there, which Bruce Rioch used to make on your birthday. You had to buy the pies and cakes, and they'd get across after training, all the lads in the bath, pies and cakes, and you'd all have a bit of banter, and it was great. And just before Bendon Park, on the right-hand side, there was a little independence car showroom, tiny. And in this car showroom was a green Lotus Elan. And we used to pass it every day going into training. And I used to look at this car, mate, and I used to think, I want that car. I want that car. And, you know, I've done it with a few things in my life. I remember looking at a suit in a shop window and thought, I want that suit. And I got the suit. I saved enough money and I got the suit. And I remember looking Bendon Park. I remember watching the first team when I was just signed and the crowds was full. It was brilliant atmosphere. And I remember saying to myself, I want to play for the first team here. I want to do that. And I managed to do it. And then Anfield, I was standing on the cop against Bristol City or Bristol Rovers. They beat Liverpool. Sue was the manager, knocked them out the FA Cup. But I remember that night thinking, I'd love to play. I want to play it. I want to play it. And, you know, all these dreams have come true for me. But this Lotus Elan was one of them moments. It was one of the, I want that car. I want that car. So I signed a new deal. So I goes in. I says to Stubbsy, me and Stubbsy used to sign these deals. We were like in clockwork, me and Stubbsy. So we signed these deals. So I said to Stubbsy, I'm buying a new car. And he went, so am I. And just further up the road was a Vauxhall garage. So Stubbsy went up to the Vauxhall garage to buy his new car. And I went in this little independent showroom and I walked in and the fella, he knew straight away. And I said, I want to buy this car. And he said, okay. And we sorted out all the paperwork and I drove it out the showroom. In fact, the next day I went back and picked it up. The next day I went back and it was all like shiny and it was all ready for me. Finished training, couldn't wait to get up there. Got me Lotus Elan convertible. Shot home, racing green. It was racing green. Got home. My mum's like looking at me. What is that? I'm made up, right? So I'm like, drives into training the next day, parks it up, like in the car park, goes into training. Bruce walks straight into the dressing room. He just goes, this is before training. He goes, whose is the Lotus Elan? So I've gone, oh my God. So I've gone, yeah, Gaffer, it's mine. He's gone, come and see me after training. So I've gone, all right. Gone and seen him after training. All training, I'm thinking, what's going on? So I've gone into training. He said, I've had your mum on the phone. He said, that car, he said, I'm not having it. You're driving up and down the M62 every day. He said, not having it. He said, you're crashing that, you're dead. He said, I've rang so-and-so from the car showroom. He's got a check there. He's going to give you all your money back. He went, drive up there and go and buy yourself a proper car, like Stubbsy. He bought an Astra. Stubbsy had bought an Astra. So in the end, I've had to go to the Vauxhall garage. I had to buy a Vauxhall. And mate, every day that Lotus Elan went back in the window, and every day that Lotus Elan was like that at me, just shaking its head, just like, what more can I say? And I had to give it back, and that was it. One day I had it, one day.
Change times. I can't walk past Bruce Rea teaching you about third man run or tackling, how to tackle well, how to get away with one. People that listen to this series, they're genuinely interested in the art of football. Pick anything out of those examples you gave and explain what he taught you.
We used to play a lot of practice matches, a lot of shape with Bruce. He was a stickler, you know, for playing into Andy Walker. I mean, we had some fantastic Scots play for us. Ian McNeil was the scout up there, brought out. John McGinley, Andy Walker. What a player Andy Walker was. John was very raw, but very effective. Coyley was brilliant. What a fella Coyley is. Stevie Fulton come down. Miksu Patalainen come down, mate. It was brilliant. But Bruce, I mean, I was talking to you there about, you know, things he taught me. But we had a player called Mark Patterson, right, northern boy, Paddy was. I think he was from somewhere like Preston. He'd been at the club a while, rough, like dogged, like aggressive, hard as nails. So anyway, we were playing this practice match, but he used to kick shit out of me, Paddy, because I was like this young kid. I'd just come into the team. And to be all honesty, he was a threat to his position because I'd gone into midfield. So we played in this practice match, mate. He smashed me. He cut me in half, like smashed me. Got up. You know, you're told, especially from the family I'm from, you don't show pain. You just get up and you carry on. You don't show it like you're defeated. You just get on with it. If you get the opportunity, you get them back. So we come off half time, and Bruce just says to, because we had a couple of young lads playing to make up the numbers, just says to one of the young lads, off, and he comes on. Bruce comes on. Comes on, middle of the park, 5 minutes gone, giving the ball away. Anyway, the ball goes out. I remember it goes out to the left, and Paddy is going towards the ball. And Bruce just goes diag and just like full pelt. Mate, he tackles him up here, like two-footed up here. It's like smashes him. Like you remember Bruce Rioch, like he just smashes him. And like stands up, he was like that Ali Foreman when he stands up and he's looking over him. It's like that moment. He's like, and he just turned around to me and he went, that's how you tackle. And I just remember thinking like one, he's like proper looked after me. So it was that like, yeah, he's on my side, the gaffer, like he's on my side. But also I just thought like, I'm never going to like, if I have to get someone back, I'm going to muller them. Do you know what I mean? Because obviously, it's acceptable for him. It's acceptable for me. Like, and obviously, that's what he likes. So, mate, I was like, so, I mean, a lot of my games in for Bolton, you know, I used to fly into tackles. I used to like smash people and stuff. And you know, I got a thirst for it. I actually loved like the art of tackling. I loved it. I loved like a 50-50. I never shirked out of a 50-50, mate. Never. And you know, you give me one, I used to love it. I used to love it.
Before the rest of this big interview, I'd like to tell you that our entire archive of audio and video content is now on our new YouTube channel. We've begun filming all of our interviews, and there are already loads of clips with guests, including Rio Ferdinand, Conor Cody, Brendan Rodgers and Jamie Carragher, plus full interviews for you to watch and to share. Please do share with friends. Go to YouTube and search Graham Hunter, or click on the link in the show notes to this episode and become a subscriber. I honestly think you'll enjoy it. Thanks.
Hold up. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You come from a family, several of them were extremely good in the ring. But just because you come from, you said obviously the stock I come from, just because you come from that family doesn't mean that you necessarily, you know, you have to be fighting every day all the time. And I wonder, did you take into your game, whether it was Marine, whether it was as you went forward through Bolton and Liverpool and Sunderland or whatever, did you initially think, I have to be careful not to be falling out with everybody and resorting to fists all the time, that you had to mask a part of your inherent character that comes from right across your family?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to learn to be professional, haven't you? I mean, it's one thing going from Sunday League football where everyone, you know, 20 people are watching on the line. When a fight goes off, everyone dives in. It's just like the OK Corral. I mean, that's how I grew up playing Sunday League football. There was plenty of them occasions. But when you're playing football, there comes a consequence to getting set off, isn't it? Because, you know, your team goes down to 10 men, there's a crowd, there's repercussions, you could lose the game, 3 points, promotion, you know, fine, you get fined thousands of pounds. So, you know, there has to be a professional edge to it. I mean, like I said, don't get me wrong, if there's a 60-40 against, you know, I'm still going in for it, but I'm going to try and be cute about it and not get sent off. Listen, the way I grew up, I see a clinical psychologist now, he's a sports psychologist as well. And I speak to him regular, mate, certainly through lockdown and stuff. It's been a difficult time and I speak to him and we've kind of like gone through a lot of stuff and we're actually now on a page of like, you know, why people are molded a certain way and why certain things happen. And we've gone back to my childhood and stuff. And, you know, I was always, you know, I was conditioned to win, like just to win. Now in life, you know, for 90% of my professional life or 100% of my professional life, that might have been a good thing to have, a good quality to have, because it got me to where I was. It got me to how I was as a footballer and what have you. But, you know, in life, you can't always win. You know, sometimes, you know, it's not about winning the battle. It's about winning the war, innit? And sometimes you've got to concede the battle. And, you know, if it's a tug of war, sometimes you've got to drop the rope. If it's an argument, you've got to drop the rope sometimes. So winning is not always an option in life. But in football and sport, you know, it was something that got me to, you know, the echelons of the game, you know, to the elite of playing for one of the biggest clubs in the world and playing for my country. But there has to be a professionalism about the way you go about that.
But I wonder whether, if you're being taught that winning is everything, to win everything, if, from small to medium to large all the time, is one of the things to decouple from that? Because a lot of kids today are not taught that. If you talk, you'll know this inside out. If you talk to any scout, any coach, there are a lot of kids who don't feel the way you were taught to feel. And that you actually sometimes have to take a talented kid, boy or girl, but we're talking about the professional game here, and actually look to G them up without going over all the boundaries that now get you kicked out of the game and so on and so forth. But I wonder if teaching people that winning is important, that winning is everything, but taking shame away from being defeated or losing or being able to say, that's not the battle I want to fight right now. If you can take that shame thing away, which I think wasn't taken away, I'm older than you, but when we were growing up in that idea of you have to win everything all the time, you have to be hard, you have to decouple the idea of stepping away or losing occasionally. It's shameful, because that's one of the ways you can keep the hard edge but not beat yourself up. I think
you can't win everything, you know. You know it's impossible, isn't it, to win everything, to win every battle, whether it's small, big, whatever it may be, you know, whether it's an argument or an FA Cup final or a Champions League, whatever it, World Cup, you know, you can't win everything. You've got to take the adversity though, and you've got to take the feeling, the emotion, and you've got to harness it to you know, to bring the good out of it. There's no good. I mean, you can sulk initially. You know, you're sulking and you're upset and you're disgusted or you whatever. But you've got to use that as a fuel. You've got to use that to harness, like, you know, inside you that you don't want to do that again. You don't want that feeling again. So you will try even harder next time. Mate, I worked in a pub when I was 19 years of age. I was working in the Sportsman's just up the road from Tranmere Rovers' ground. I was a barman. And these fellas used to come into the pub. And I'd signed for Marine. I was a semi-pro. I was making a few headlines, like clubs were watching me and blah, blah, blah. And I remember these fellas saying to me, you will never make it. You've got no chance. You're too old. You're not good enough. You're too skinny. Listen, you're waiting in a pub. No one's going to sign you. And, you know, a lot of 19-year-olds, certainly from 19-year-olds of the millennials that I've come across, would take that like, oh, like, I'm not good enough. And I took it as, I'll show you that I'm good enough. And I harnessed that. I took it on. And do you know what? When I signed for Liverpool, I went back to that pub to look for them fellas. I went back to walk into that bar, in that pub. You know, a couple of the same people, same faces were there. The two fellas weren't there. But I went in to see them, to go, what were you saying to me? What you know, I've proved you wrong. And I had a lot of that growing up. I had a lot of people telling me, you can't do this, you can't do that. There's no such thing, mate. If you want it, then you've got to harness the bad stuff, and you've got to fuel it to what drives you to be a winner, or what drives you to get to where you want to be. You know, whatever your dream is or whatever your passion is, you've got to harness it. And if that means trying harder, you know, I beat myself up on the golf course all the time. But, you know, my sports psychologist says you've got to try harder. You've got to practice harder. You've got to, you know, that's the only way you're going to get better. You know, don't beat yourself up about it. Don't put the club down. Don't tell yourself you can't do it. Get out and practice. And that's what you've got to do. It's easy to quit. You know, it's harder to practice more.
You're in an area that I find interesting, Jason. So, again, stop me if you want. But when those voices from those two particular guys in the bar were in your head, did you quite often stoke yourself with it? Did you have to go back to that anger? Because I think it is that I'll show you. That's anger. Did you have to sort of touch it every now and again to give yourself a G up again? I'm still showing them. Did that anger live with you for a long time? Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, pre-season. Or do you know what, mate? Do you know what? They come into your head when it's pissing down with rain. You've got to get two trains to training and a bus and a 20-minute walk, and it's pissing down, it's freezing. And they come in your head and you're thinking, like, what am I doing? And freezing, it's like, I'm not even in the first team at Marine. I'm in the reserves. You know, I've got to get home. And then two pop in your head going, you'll never make it. And you just think, like, the harder I try, the more effort I put in, even now when I'm at the lowest. You know, Rolly Howard, he took me to a first team game in Marine. I thought I was going to play. Mate, I didn't even get stripped. He had me picking up the dirty undies after the game and loading the kit up and, you know, turning the socks inside out. He took me just to help the kit man, like Marine's first team. And I was like, then moments, like, you just think to yourself, what's it all about? I went home and cried my eyes out. And, like, these people who say, you will never make it, that's when they pop into your head. That's when they pop into your head. And, you know, they drive you. I'm not saying it's, you know, I did it to prove them wrong. Obviously, I wanted to be a footballer and I had to do it the hard way. But, you know, proving people wrong is something that I enjoy doing.
I wanted to talk more about Bruce. I've got to be careful of your time, although you know that this is a longer interview than normal. We've got also sponsors' questions and we've got members' questions. But I can't really leave without two things about Bruce. I remember I read in your book the anecdote about Bruce at a cup tie when the fans are queuing up. If I'm not wrong, Bruce made players from Bolton go around the queue with cups of tea just to keep the people happy and to show that whether it was ordered to or not, that we care about you. And although it's an anecdote from a long time ago, I liked his idea that the fans were important enough that the players should go and give them a cup of tea, a brew, while they were queuing up for tickets. That's a true anecdote.
100%, mate. You ask any player that was there whether we did that, they'll all confirm that story is true. You know, for a couple of reasons. I think, firstly, you know, you touched on the crowd there. I think even through these these tough times, this pandemic. I think it's showing, certainly in football, it's showing, you know, what an influence a crowd has. You know, certainly Liverpool's emotional tie to their crowd, to the Kop, is, you know, we're missing that now. You know, it's not there. I think results are justifying that as well. The way away results are, I think that's playing into the mix, that just crowds, how influential that they are. And being on the pitch in front of, you know, I played in front of 120,000, I played in front of 3,000. You know, they make a difference, mate, to you as a footballer. They just do. They enlighten the, you know, the feeling, the emotion in you, the adrenaline, they help. So I think, first and foremost, you know, Bruce's relationship with the fans, he knew that we needed the fans. He knew that Bolton, you know, the fan base that we had a really close connection to the players and the team, and he wanted to keep that. But also he wanted to keep the players on the, you know, the feet on the ground. And you know, it's easy to run away with yourself when you're earning a few quid and you're buying Lotus of Lands for a day. And, you're living the life as a footballer. It's easy to forget, you know, a little bit of where you come from and, you know, what actually happens in real life. It is easy to, you know, get away from that. And I think it's just a little bit of, listen, you know, let's just keep your feet on the ground. Let's do everything right. Let's give a little bit back and let's keep this relationship with the fans, because you're going to need them, you know, when it's not going so well. So, yeah, we were out there giving cups of tea out while they were queuing up for cup tickets, yeah.
It's the way it should be. So our sponsors are Bet365, and they've sent a ton of questions, but one that I quite like, it's simply stated, it's one of the most obvious questions to ask you. But who would you describe as the best footballer you ever played against in your career? And it's a completely personal choice.
I remember some of the tough games. John Solarco tore me to pieces one game, smashed him, got a yellow card and couldn't touch him after that. He twisted me inside out. He was one of them horrible wingers. You know, he was just so clever with the ball, left, right. He didn't know where he was going. And he gave me a torrid time one game. I mean, I've been privileged to be on the pitch with some of the best, mate. Lothar Matthäus, Baresi. And then I've come up against, in my positions, the likes of Paolo Maldini, Roberto Carlos. But one, Ronaldo, Ronaldinho, when we played Brazil. But I played centre midfield against Brazil. It was my last game for Ireland. I played the second half and Kaká played. And I tell you what, mate, he just glided across the floor, effortless. He twisted his left foot, right foot, his energy, he was up and down. And I used to think, like, you know, I was fit and I'd just wear them out by just running and, you know, they'd have to track me back. And in the end, they'd give up and I'd get in. I used to think like that. Mate, he used to track me back. He was tackling me. He would get his hands dirty, he'd roll his sleeves up. When he got the ball, he was just quality, his touch. He had it where he wanted it. Mate, it was a privilege to be on the pitch with him. And I come off thinking, he's a proper player. He's the best. Yeah. Kaká, mate, different gravy.
Did you enjoy Istanbul even more? Because he was a big part of the way in which AC Milan trampled on Liverpool. And because his combination with Crespo and that the way in which he was doing what you've just described, you went hand to hand with. He was doing that Istanbul that night, but then he gets caught playing with his sock ties in one of the goals when I think maybe the Smeitzer goal. But seeing him doing that and in the first half, the club you support and the guy that you played against, you go, here we go. And then seeing your team coming back and tipping them on their arses, that must have been a doubly fun night.
Oh, mate, I mean, I was waiting for Sky that night, so, you know, the emotion was just, I had to keep it in check a little bit, but, yeah, it was amazing, it was amazing. I mean, don't get me wrong, it wasn't the greatest Liverpool team, and I did fear the worst, because it was arguably one of the best Milan teams that we'd seen for a long time. And you rightly say, you know, the first half, Kaká was unplayable. I mean, the way Stephen couldn't get to grips with him, he ran Steven into the ground. He couldn't get near him. And for anyone to do that to Steven Gerrard is phenomenal. But then, you know, it was a bit of a masterclass from Rafa. You know, he knew Kaká was the problem. So did he come on? And did he, you know, did a job on Kaká? He played in the hole. He stopped him playing for me. And that gives Steven the license further up the pitch to affect the game in a manner in which was probably as good as Kaká's in the first half. And, you know, what Steven did, you know, it's just one of them sporting moments, isn't it, that we watch and we look upon and just think, wow, you know, that was something special.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true, Graham Hunter, and Back Page. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Here endeth the lesson.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.